The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are not necessarily the views of WMAL.
When the time has come for moving on, you can't go wrong.
Pointing You Home with Eric Stewart on WMAL.
Pointing You Home.
Now, here's your host, Eric Stewart.
Welcome back to Pointing You Home, your number one local real estate news resource. Stick around at 8:30 for Seniors Solutions, where we welcome Helen Flynn back into the studio. Hey, if you have to leave us at any point during the show, don't worry. You can listen to any of our shows on your favorite podcasting app at your convenience. Right now, let's jump into local news that matters to you. Have you ever wondered why DC has so many row houses? And what's the difference between a row house and a townhouse? See, the more compact type of home, like a townhouse or row house or otherwise, works very well in D.C. because it allows for greater density, right? And if you're not going to live in an apartment building or a condominium building, and you don't have to have a lot of land, a row house works very well. But why is it different than a townhouse? If you look outside of D.C. and other central cities in the country, you notice this type of home called a townhouse. Now, you'll notice, too, that those townhouses have a varied elevation, which means that's the description of the front of the property, where one will have a front porch, the next one may have an overhang of some kind, one may have a different pitch, maybe a Mansard roof where the roof comes down the front, one might have a gabled roof. So each one of the townhouses looks slightly different. You can tell the difference between them. Not so much with row houses. With row houses, the focus is not on having a different look. The front of every row house is consistent across. Almost all of them have front porches. And if you look on any street in Washington, D.C., in southeast, southwest, northeast, or northwest, it's pretty much the same. So those are sometimes 20 in a row, whereas townhouses might be four or five in a row. And you can see luxury townhouses off of Maryland 301. If you've ever been out, there's a newly built residential subdivision. They're two-car garage townhouses. They're like single-family homes, 3,200 square feet above grade, but very small lots, making it easier for the buyers to maintain the properties over time, but also not giving them that much room to live in. And if you don't really need a lot of room, don't want a lot of yard, then that works very, very well. I've sold several homes in D.C. in the last couple of years that are row houses and recently have been showing row houses in southwest Washington, D.C. Speaking of southwest, we've noticed that the arena stage, when it first dropped into southwest D.C., it ended up really creating a change in perception for what that area could look like. If you may remember, southwest D.C. was the old restaurants, the old wharf set up. You had lots of row houses, a lot of assisted living and housing that was for those who needed help to live there. You did not have the kind of vibrant new waterfront that we have now. Well, it kind of all started with Arena Stage. And Molly Smith, who's the current Arena Stage artistic director, and she's been there for a long time, she celebrates her 20th year. Thank you, Molly, for all the fine direction that you give through Arena Stage. As an acting major in college, one who studied the Stanislavski method, I always appreciate good theater, and Arena Stage has definitely, for decades and decades, under Zelda Fischlander as well, has brought us a lot of great theater. You know, the irregular-shaped outer shell that you see when you look at the it kind of reminds me of this amorphous creation that's pinned by three major columns on the inside, and it evokes a spirit of freedom. It evokes a spirit of life, and it really rejuvenated Southwest and led a lot of the development that we've seen that's gone on recently. You know, speaking of development, there is a challenge right now in most of the counties around Washington, D.C. and in Washington, D.C. for affordable housing. Now, we hear this and we think, well, people just need to make more money, or somebody needs to provide the opportunity, or I don't know how that's going to work out. One way that it could is by using public land to solve this problem. Now, public land does not mean parkland necessarily. It means land that was committed for other purposes that could be used, and the county can actually generate income to underwrite much of what we're paying in tax as a result of it. Montgomery County, Arlington County, Fairfax County, Washington, D.C., and other counties, the tax rates in our general area are pretty high. If we were to use the public land and use that for housing, we could generate income for the county, which would be a benefit in two ways. One is it allows us to provide housing for those teachers and especially teachers who are not making enough, because that's just the standard of income, even in our area, does not pay teachers enough to live decently, to live well. Oftentimes, they have to combine incomes to be able to afford a modest home, which is, you know, hey, look, this is the nature of life. We are not all supposed to make the same amount of money. We're never going to make the same amount of money, and there's no equality in how people make money. Life is not fair, okay? We all choose different jobs. We all choose different opportunities, right? Those opportunities that we pick, whether it's to be a director at Arena Stage or whether to be a teacher at a local school, or for me to be in the real estate business, hey, if I don't sell houses, I don't make anything. All the risk is on my shoulders. I have nobody underwriting my life. It's all based upon what I'm able to do through my hard work, and you understand. So that said, each person's income affords them opportunities according to what the cost of living is for that area. In our area, the cost of living has gone up sizably over the last 10 years, especially as Washington, D.C. prices have tripled over the last 15 years. Many of the areas don't have enough homes for those who need to live close to the schools that they're teaching at or at the police departments that they're working at. Have you ever noticed that the police department tends to be served by police officers who drive from the north or from the west or from the south, and they all come in because they can't live around the police departments? You know, think of Arlington, think of Bethesda, etc. So we have to think of some creative ways to provide that. We're not meeting our rental housing demand. We do need to build housing for low-income earners, and we just frankly need more housing altogether. We're going to face a horrendous shortage. A lot of our potential growth as a county is going to have to come through reusing land that we already have and repurposing it. Hey, if you think about areas like Nashville, and I'll cover this tonight on Real Estate Now, Nashville, there's a lady, her name's Kathleen Irvin, and she moved to Nashville just 12 years ago. And get this, she moved from the Northeast to the relaxed atmosphere, the green parks, and generally low cost of living. But in the past 5 years, her commute time from her 50s ranch in an area called Glendale, that is about 12 miles away from downtown Nashville, has tripled, okay? And this is the challenge. Again, they're starting to experience a similar challenge, and that region's population has grown 45% in the last 17 years. If we're going to grow, which we are, especially if we win the Amazon contract somewhere in the D.C. region, we're going to see sizable growth very quickly. We may, in fact, if we land one, we may also land the Apple contract. Okay, fine. But still, even if we don't, we're going to continue to grow as people pull into Washington, D.C., want to have the quality of life that we do offer here, and the ease of commuting that we offer through our metro systems, the quality of education, etc. So we've got to think of ways that we can provide better housing in town, that people don't have to keep driving further and further away. It's not going to be good for us to do that. Have you ever thought about what you need to have in your bank account in order to pay for whatever work you may have come up at your property? Well, before I tackle that, I want to mention a couple of homes that we have that are currently for sale, okay? This is one that's in Durwood, Maryland, 6001 Warm Springs Drive in Durwood, Maryland, offered at $850,000. This is on 2 acres. Now, if you're familiar with Avery Road, which comes off of Norbeck Road and is just maybe 8 minutes from the metro, up on a hill Warm Springs Drive is right by Needwood Park. It has over 3,500 square feet. Actually, it's a good bit higher than that because of the square footage. We're getting the final numbers from the seller on that. The property has tremendous updates and can be seen today if you're interested by going to ericstewartgroup.com. Just 5 minutes from Safeway Supermarket, CVS, Starbucks, and 10 minutes, like I said, from the downtown Rockville Metro, yet you have complete privacy at the property. And also up in Gaithersburg, we've got a home at 1333 Carlsbad Drive in Gaithersburg. That is listed for $335. It's a three-bedroom, three-and-a-half-bath, townhouse. Roof was replaced in 17, freshly painted, replaced the windows, new carpet throughout, new hot water heater. Definitely take a look at that as well. You can see all of our listings in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. And just listed a new home off Macomb Street area in downtown D.C. for $2.5 million. If you're down in that area and want to get some information, reach out to us as well. It's not in the open market yet. We're getting it ready to go up soon. And then we've got several new listings coming on the market in Virginia in the next couple of days, too. So, hey, hope all is well for you today. Hope you're enjoying your Sunday morning. I'm going to take a quick break, and then I'll come back and tell you what you need to have saved for a rainy day, how much you need to have in your emergency fund, and how you can get started, which is a key, right? Go to ericstewartgroup.com for any information on us, or download our free market-ready guide, how to get your home ready to sell. Also, the right-sizing guide, which will tell you how to get through the process of getting rid of your stuff, think through which realtor to hire, and so much more. Going to take a quick break. Like I said, I'll be right back with more of Pointing You Home right here on WMAL.
This is Pointing You Home on WMAL.
Why is it so hard for us to save money? Why is it so difficult for us to decide that we're going to start a process and actually stay faithful to it? Think about home repair emergencies when the roof needs replacement for $15,000 or $20,000. That's a lot of money. So budgeting for it, I often sell homes where a home might have a roof that's got 10 years of life left on it, and the buyer buys the property, and it's not brand new, and they accept that, and they negotiate with the seller to purchase the property. But frankly, the home inspectors say things like, you need to budget now to replace this in about 10 years. But doing that is a different matter.
Up on the roof.
So oftentimes we don't set money aside for these kinds of emergencies in life, a financial disaster in general. You need to think about putting aside somewhere between 1 and 3% of your home's value. So you got a $500,000 home, you need to have $5,000 to $15,000 set aside. Now, remember, a roof on a $500,000 home may cost you the same as a roof on a $900,000 home, as would cost you the same on a $300,000 home. It all just depends on where the property is located, what the cost of labor is. In roofing terms, they call it a 10-foot by 10-foot section a square, and they measure the number of squares that a roof needs, and then they come up with a value. So you could say at one point, you could say, okay, roof will cost you $7,000. If there were 10 squares, it's $700 a square. Now, these days, it's doubled that, and something like that. Everybody's situation is different. There's a rule of 1% to 3% set aside. It would be good to literally walk into the bank and set up a savings account at your local bank and call it something. Call it the rainy day house fund or whatever it might be, and start seeding money into that. You could do that into a savings account where it won't grow much. You just know it's going to be safe and there and accessible if you need it. You could also decide to open up a stock account where you're invested in some kind of mutual fund if you want to take a little bit more risk. Okay, but the value will fluctuate according to the growth of the stock market and the fall of the stock market. At the end of the day, if you don't think you're going to need to have access to that money for some time, set the account up and invest it into some kind of source that would allow it to grow faster than inflation. And we all know that food has gone up a lot over the last 7 years, certainly more than the 0.5% that we make when we put money into a bank account, right? Now, you might divide it, maybe have some invested in stocks, maybe some invested in a savings account, but keeping it simple is best. A general emergency fund will cover you in case of some major issue. If you have a high deductible, such as I do on my residence, so that if something happens that costs less than $5,000, I take care of the first $5,000. Now, I pay less annually for my homeowner's insurance by doing that. If you decide you want to have like a $500 deductible, you're going to need to pay more annually for that insurance. Now, insurance is effectively like buying the potential need you will have. It's like buying an umbrella in case it rains. You have to buy insurance for your property, and it's a good idea that you do regardless, but you have to if you have a mortgage. If you don't, you don't have to buy insurance to protect your property in case of damage, which is why you hear about so many people in Louisiana after the Hurricane Katrina that lost everything because they had no insurance. They'd had their houses for too long and just decided to take the risk each year that they would never get hit by a hurricane. Same thing happened in Galveston when Hurricane Ike came through. Look at Hawaii with the volcano at Kilauea that has devastated entire communities. And many of these homeowners had no insurance on their properties and they'll never be moving back. You might also consider doing what's called a home equity line of credit. Now, that is a tool where you open up the ability to borrow money against the equity in your home. You do so, you borrow money against it. If you decide to use it for your house, you can still deduct the interest according to the tax law change of late 2017. But if you use the money in a home equity line of credit to go on a trip or pay for somebody's college, you no longer can deduct that interest. You may want to consider putting 1% to 3% aside for emergency funds. It's actually a pretty good idea to start when your kids are little, open up an account for each one of the kids and just put a little bit in each month, $50 each month into each one of the kids' accounts. Build up some savings for them, allow them to grow, put that into stocks. Maybe even when they're a little older, open up a 401k or rather than 401k, an IRA for them. Set them up so that they will have a long-term savings plan and they'll learn how money grows over the long term. When it comes to real estate, though, make sure you have 1% to 3% set aside in case of a disaster. In Washington, D.C., there is a law that is called TOPA. Now, TOPA is a law that was created to protect tenants in properties from being ushered out for their properties to be sold and for them to be on the street and have nowhere to live. That was the goal of TOPA originally. TOPA stands for Tenant Opportunity to Purchase Act. Now, what does that mean? It means we want to give the tenants the first opportunity to buy a property that they're currently renting from the homeowner. The law has been onerous for homeowners in its demands that the homeowners provide notice in a certain period of time. And frankly, I sold a property in Columbia Heights probably 7 years ago now, and the owner of that property gave notice, gave an opportunity, didn't do it exactly the right way, and the tenant used that to leverage $10,000 out of my seller's pocket. Because if the tenant is not approached in exactly the right fashion, I mean, and it's not really easy to understand, the TOPA law has been very difficult, it has caused a lot of homeowners a lot of angst, a lot of problems, and actually helped tenants to keep the properties and keep themselves in the properties, which was ultimately the purpose, but through means that were never intended. So there is a change in the law that is for single-family houses going to provide an exemption that has not been passed yet by Congress. The District of Columbia has passed it, but Congress has to pass it because the district is not its own state. There's a three-day notice eligibility qualifications for elderly and disabled tenants with protections. Those are all very, very important. And the work that is being done now still has to progress a little bit further. But hopefully there will be some changes that will be beneficial and won't be so onerous for the homeowners, but will also still allow current renters to stay where they are. Hey, it's time for the luxury layover. And I've got a property that is in Rockville, Maryland, that is in the Manor Country Club, backing up to the 10th hole. $1.3 million, originally built in 1936, with a major renovation done in 2000. over 4,200 square feet of living space. The property has exceptional views out onto the course, a beautiful lot, the privacy that you always dream about, but gives you the benefit of golf course living. I was recently on the Cheddar on MSNBC doing an interview during the tournament at Avenel, and this is now 10 days ago, about golf course living. One of the benefits of living in a golf course community is that you get to live in a house in a normal, like in an area that you would want to live in because it's close to where you work and gives you the benefit of the schools and whatever else you might want to have, but gives you that country club feel, that country club life, so you don't have to own a second home someplace else. You can come home to your one home and get the benefit of having a first and a second home combined into one. If you'd like more information or it catches your and piques your interest, the property's at 4318 Breton Road, and we can be contacted to set up a private appointment for that. That's at ericstewartgroup.com. Also in Virginia, we've got a $1.5 million property, 3300 Barkley Drive, that is just an exceptional property. Get more information on that. Check us out at ericstewartgroup.com. Well, we're coming to the end of the show. And every time I come to the end of the show, I try to think of something to share with you. And when it comes to pricing a house correctly, we have to think about what is the market condition like? What is the realtor response? And what are the buyers saying as well? All three of those are paramount to come up with and correct a price that may be too high. Want more information on how to sell your home or buy a house? Call us today at 800-900-9104. 800-900-9104. I'm Eric Stewart. Stick around if you can. I'll see you next on Senior Solutions.
The Eric Stewart Show, pointing you home on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.